Scripture reading is from Joshua chapter 7, verses 10 through 15. Joshua chapter 7, verses 10 through 15. And Jehovah said unto Joshua, Get thee up, wherefore art thou fallen upon thy face? Israel hath sinned, yea, they have even transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. Yea, they have even taken of the devoted things, and have also stolen and dissembled also, and they have even put it among their own stuff. Therefore the children of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. They turn their backs before their enemies because they are become accursed. I will not be with you any more except you destroy the devoted thing from among you. Up, sanctify the people, and say, Sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, for thus saith Jehovah, the God of Israel, This is a devoted thing. There is a devoted thing in the midst of thee. O Israel, thou canst not stand before thine enemy until ye take away the devoted thing from among you. In the morning, therefore, ye shall be brought near by your tribes, and it shall be that the tribe which Jehovah takes shall come near by family, and the family which Jehovah takes shall come near by household, and the household which Jehovah takes shall come near by man, and it shall be that he that is taken with the devoted things shall be burnt with fire, and he and all that he hath, because he hath transgressed the covenant of Jehovah, and because he hath wrought folly in Israel.
The reading of this Old Testament text, we want to be reminded of the reason why we should study such Old Testament text. In Romans, the 15th chapter, and in verse 4, the apostle writes, For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that through patience and through comfort of the Scriptures we might have hope. As we read in this Old Testament text of Joshua chapter 7, certainly we're reading about things from which valuable lessons can be learned. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 11, again the apostle writes, Now these things happened unto them by way of example. They were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages are come. Yes, there is a lot that we can learn from a study of such passages as Joshua chapter 6 and chapter 7. As we learn in Joshua chapter 7, in the verses that were read in your hearing, there was sin among the people of God. In verse 11, it tells us that Israel has sinned. And so consequently, there were problems among the people of God. But what was the problem? We notice in Joshua chapter 6, as we studied in our last study, last Lord's Day evening, we talked about the conquering of the city of Jericho. And we see on this map how that Joshua was to lead them into the promised land, crossing over the Jordan River, fighting against the city of Jericho, and of course certain instructions had to be obeyed. We noted that when they were obeyed, the walls fell down flat, and every man went up straightway. They had obeyed the commandment of God, but the conquering of the land had just begun. Not far from Jericho, there was another city, the city of Ai. As Joshua had led the people in conquering the city of Jericho, we first must notice that it was their city by virtue of the fact that God had given it to them. In Joshua chapter 1, or chapter 6, verse 1, the writer says, Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And Jehovah said unto, that says Joshua 1, that should be Joshua chapter 6, the passage that I'm reading. Joshua chapter 1 introduces us to Joshua as the great military leader who would lead them into the promised land and divide it among them. But in Joshua chapter 6, God said, See, I have given into thy hand Jericho, the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor. In verse 2, I have given into thy hand. It belonged to them. But yet there were conditions that they had to meet in order to take the city of Jericho. They were to march around the city once each day for 6 days, and on the seventh day march around 7 times. The priests were to blow on the ram's horns, and the people were to shout, and the walls would fall down. And indeed they did, and every man went up straightway, and they took the city. But there was another condition attached to those things that were the spoils of that land. In Joshua chapter 6, in verse 17, it says, "And the city shall be devoted, even it and all that is therein, to Jehovah. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. But as for you, only keep yourselves from the devoted thing, lest when ye have devoted it, ye take of the devoted thing, so would ye make the camp of Israel accursed and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are holy unto Jehovah, and they shall come into the treasury of Jehovah." I was talking with Caitlin this past week about this very text and trying to explain to an almost 7-year-old what the devoted thing was. And I know that those of you in the younger Bible classes have been talking about this. And what I wanted her to understand was that those things that were a part of the city of Jericho, the silver, the gold, the things that were very precious to them, they belonged to God. They were His. And the Israelites were not to go in and take those things. But yet we see that there was one who did. And just how important that was. This little city of Ai, right next door to Jericho, not all that far away, was the next city to be taken in the conquest of the land of Canaan. But when they came to that city in chapter 7, it tells us in verse 2 that Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven on the east side of Bethel, and spake to them, saying, "Go up and spy out the land." And the men went up and spied out Ai. They returned to Joshua and said unto him, "Let not all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and smite Ai. Make not all the people to toil thither, for they are but few." We don't have to send the whole army there. It's just a small city. They don't have much defense. Let's just send in a small army to take the city of Ai. And it tells us at verse 5, "And the men of Ai smote of them 36 men, and they chased them from before the gate unto Shibarim, and smote them at the descent. And the hearts of the people melted and became as water." The Israelite army was defeated. And when they came to the city of Ai being defeated, people want to know why. "We were so victorious when we conquered the city of Jericho. And here we are at this much smaller city and we can't take that." And God told them in chapter 7 that there is sin among you. In verse 1 it says, "But the children of Israel committed the trespass in the devoted thing. For Achan took of the devoted thing, and the anger of Jehovah was kindled against the children of Israel." Achan messed up. God said, "Those things that are in Jericho, you can't have them. The silver, the gold, all of those things that are of value, you can't have them. They belong to me. They are to be put into the treasury of the Lord." But the text tells us that Achan didn't do that. He partook of those things. And we want to see the consequences imposed not only upon him, but also upon his whole house. When we read the story in the 7th chapter, and in verses 16 through verse 18, in accord with the instructions of God in the preceding verses, the text tells us, "So Joshua rose up early in the morning, and brought Israel near by their tribes, and the tribe of Judah was taken. And he brought near the family of Judah, and he took the family of the Zerahites. And he brought near the family of the Zerahites, man by man. And Zabdi was taken, and he brought near his household, man by man. And Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah, was taken." When I read this, brethren, I think of what Achan must have known was coming. When he stands before Joshua, tribe by tribe, family by family, knowing that ultimately it's going to be man by man, and Achan is going to stand there alone, knowing what he did, knowing that he did not obey the commandment of God.
knowing that the consequences had not only been imposed upon the people of Israel, but certainly there would be consequences imposed upon him. In verse 19, Joshua said unto Achan, "My son, give, I pray thee, glory to Jehovah, the God of Israel, and make confession unto him, and tell me now what thou hast done, hide it not from me." How would you like to have been Achan? Standing before Joshua, all alone, knowing that what you did was the opposite of what God said, knowing that there would be consequences imposed, Achan begins to confess what he did. Achan answered Joshua and said, "Of a truth, I have sinned against Jehovah, the God of Israel. And thus have I done. When I saw among the spoil a goodly Babylonian mantle, and 200 shekels of gold, and a wedge of 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight," he said, "then I coveted them, and I took them. And behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it." Look carefully at that. I saw it. I coveted it. I took it, and I hid it. That's what Achan did. He confesses boldly before Joshua. But notice just the confession of his sin did not remove the consequences that had been imposed upon Israel and were to be imposed upon Achan. I want to look at these steps along the way. The sins that Achan committed. He said, "I saw it. I saw it." Isn't that how temptation originated in the Garden of Eden? When we turn back to Genesis chapter 3, Genesis chapter 3, in verse 1, "Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field, which Jehovah God had made. And he said unto the woman, Yea, hath God said, Ye shall not eat of any tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, Of the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, Ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, Ye shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as God, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food," what happened? She saw it. She saw it, that it was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise. She took of the fruit thereof, and did eat. And she gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. She saw it. David, in 2 Samuel chapter 11 and in verse 2, he had a problem. He saw some things that were of great temptation to him. And we might say, well, why didn't he turn and go the other way? Well, he's already been tempted. In 1 or 2 Samuel chapter 11, read with me beginning at verse 1. 2 Samuel chapter 11. "And it came to pass at the return of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried at Jerusalem. And it came to pass at eventide that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful to look upon." David saw something he shouldn't see. A woman bathing. The Bible tells us in these next few verses how that he lusted for her, how that he coveted her, how that he committed adultery with her, how that he tried to hide his sin, and ultimately had her husband killed because he saw something that he shouldn't be seeing. You know, brethren, we talk to our little ones and we try to teach them the song of warning. Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. You see, that's how sin was introduced in the Garden of Eden. That's what got David into trouble. And that's what got Achan into trouble. He saw some things that weren't his, and he began to desire those things to the extent that he took them. Just like Eve desired the things that she saw, and she took them. Just like David, who saw that which he saw, and he took it, and so did Achan. We're warned in Proverbs chapter 6, regarding the strange woman in verse 25. Lust not after her beauty in thy heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. Job said, I made a covenant with mine eyes. How then should I look upon a virgin? Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, But I say unto you that every one that looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery already with her in his heart. We see the danger. I saw, Achan said. And then he said, I coveted. To covet something means to take pleasure in it to the extent that it's become very desirable, not just that you would like to have it, but you desire it passionately, is the dictionary definition. I have on the chart power in advertising. What do you think the purpose of advertising something is? The purpose is to make you want it. To make you want it enough to go out and try to buy it. To create a desire. You see, if there wasn't any desire created in advertising, there would be no advertising. Why do you want a new car? Some folks say, well, because I saw this one. And it was very attractive. And so I wanted it. And we began to make arrangements then to buy it. And sometimes to the extent of losing the ability to reason, it goes out the window. And we do things very foolishly, like Achan did, like Eve did, and like David did. I coveted, Achan said. Contentment is certainly an attribute of those who are children of God. In our study of the book of Hebrews, we noticed that those Hebrews were very tempted to return to the practices of Judaism. They have endorsed those things that are right, been baptized into Christ, enjoyed the blessing of the forgiveness of their sins. But yet in Hebrews, the 13th chapter, and in verse 5, the writer says, Be free from the love of money, content with such things as ye have. For himself hath said, I will in no wise fail thee, neither will I in any wise forsake thee. Be content with such things as you have. The apostle writing to the young preacher Timothy. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, reading beginning in verse 6, said, But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, for neither can we carry anything out. But having food and covering, we shall be therewith content. But they that are minded to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare. And many foolish and hurtful lusts, such as drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, which some, reaching after, have been led astray from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Contentment, Paul said, is a valuable characteristic. Paul, writing from a Roman prison, declared in Philippians chapter 4 and in verse 11, I've learned to be content in whatsoever state I am in. It's not easy to learn contentment. Achan was not content. When he came through the city of Jericho, he saw the goodly Babylonian garment, the gold and the silver. And he said, I coveted it. I had a burning passion. I had to have it. And so he said, I coveted it. Covetousness is something we don't preach on perhaps very much. In Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 5, it was not something that was ignored by these New Testament writers. In Colossians chapter 3, as the writer is discussing a list of things that are to be put to death and things that are to be put on, look if you will please in verse 5. He said, Put to death therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Paul doesn't pull back, if you will, or hold the punch. He tells them what you're doing is wrong and has to be put off. He simply calls it idolatry. In the Ephesian letter, in the 5th chapter and in verse 5, he said, nor filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not befitting, but rather giving of thanks. He said, For this ye know of a surety, that no fornicator, nor unclean person, nor idolater, or nor covetous man who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of God, or the kingdom of Christ and of God. Covetousness was something that certainly Moses recognized, and God in the giving of the law in Exodus chapter 20, when he said, Thou shalt not covet. That's simple enough. But Achan said, I coveted those things. Covetousness really has its roots in selfishness. In Luke, the 12th chapter, when the brothers came to Jesus wanting him to arbitrate over the inheritance, beginning at verse, Luke chapter 12, beginning at verse 13. It says, one of the multitude said unto him, Teacher, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and keep yourselves from all covetousness. For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. You're familiar with this. And he reasoned within himself as to what he would do with his grain and his goods. And he said, I will tear down my barns and I'll build greater barns. And there will I bestow my grain and my goods. And God said, Thou fool, this night is thy soul required of thee, and then whose shall the things be that thou hast prepared? In verse 21, we get the lesson these two brothers should get. So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. These two brothers wanted the greater portion of the inheritance, one or the other. They were covetous, selfish. But then Achan said, I took. After desire was created by looking, desire then became his master. It became the driving force behind his actions. I took it. James tells us in James chapter 1, beginning at verse 14, but each man is tempted when he is drawn away by his own lust and enticed. There's the desire. But when the lust is conceived, it beareth sin. Now we act upon it. And the sin, when it is full grown, bringeth forth death. Achan acted upon it. Spiritually, he's dead. He transgressed what God said because he saw it, because he coveted it. Then he says, I took it. Now, this next expression is rather interesting to me. He said, then I hid it. What benefit is it to him? He has a beautiful garment, but he can't show it to anybody. He has gold and silver, but he can't take it outside the doors of his tent. Can you imagine how rich he must have felt and how important he must have felt inside his tent when he would put the Babylonian garment about him? Perhaps let the gold and the silver trickle through his fingers, but he can't do anything with it. He hid it. In Mark, the 4th chapter, and in verse 22, the Lord said, There is nothing hid, save that it should be manifest, neither was anything made secret, but that it should come to light. You see, when we do wrong things, we can't hide it, really, any more than ultimately Achan could. In Hebrews, the 4th chapter, and in verse 13, there's no creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and laid open before the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Paul, in speaking of the judgment, said in Romans chapter 2 and in verse 16, in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men according to my gospel by Jesus Christ. You see, Achan's sin, even though he tried to cover it up, he tried to hide it, it was made known. Now, the last point I want you to see is the consequence, or should we say consequences. There are always consequences. When we disobey God, there are always consequences. The Galatian letter tells us in chapter 6 and in verse 7, Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. I talk sometimes with a lot of people. Sometimes various excuses are offered for what's been done. But friend, there are always consequences. No matter how innocent the choice may have been, no matter how well-intentioned the choice may have been, if it's wrong, there are consequences. Always. And so it was with Achan. Achan's sin caused Israel to suffer a humiliating defeat when they came to the city of Ai. In Joshua chapter 7, in verse 9, the text tells us, For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and will compass us about, and cut off our name from the earth. And what wilt thou do for thy great name? You see, the Israelites suffered. They were defeated at Ai. You remember when the spies were sent to the house of Rahab? You remember how that Rahab said, We have heard what you've done. We fear your God. And we ask that when you come upon the city of Jericho, that you just spare me and my household. Now what would the reputation of Israel be? We've been defeated. The Canaanites will hear of it. And they'll come and they'll cut us off. And what about your great name? Rahab had learned to fear God because of the things she had heard. But now Israel has been defeated. Notice, beloved, that sin is never isolated. I don't know how many times, I've tried to count, just how many times that Israel's kings, it was said of them, wherewith he made Israel to sin. There was not a good king in the whole lot of the northern 10 tribes, not one. And many times it was said, wherewith he made Israel to sin. Our sins are not isolated. We don't insulate the rest of the brethren or the rest of the world from the sins that we commit. There are consequences. And so it was with Achan. Israel was defeated. Their reputation was marred. But what about Achan's family? In Joshua chapter 7, in verse 24, Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan, the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the mantle, and the wedge of gold, and his sons, and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had. And they brought them up into the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, Why hast thou troubled us? Jehovah shall trouble thee this day. And all Israel stoned him with stones. And they burned them with fire, and stoned them with stones. And they raised over him a great heap of stones unto this day. And Jehovah turned from the fierceness of his anger. Wherefore, the name of that place was called the Valley of Achor unto this day. Get the picture, brethren. Achan marching through the city of Jericho, seeing the beautiful cloth, the gold and the silver, coveted those things, took them, hid them in the midst of his tent, and no doubt felt like the most important and the most rich man of all the people of Israel. But now, he hears the words of Joshua. Take him outside the camp. Take his wife. Take his sons. Take his daughters. Take everything that he has and destroy it. I want to know, brethren, just how rich you think Achan feels now? Just how important does he feel now as he hears the condemnation of Joshua? You see, there were consequences that reached outside of Achan. It affected his family. It affected the whole nation of Israel. It affected everything that he touched. Now turn back, if you will, to Joshua chapter 7. In verse 20, Achan answered Joshua and said, Of a truth I have sinned against Jehovah, the God of Israel, and thus have I done. When I saw among the spoil the goodly Babylonish mantle, and 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight, then I coveted them. I took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. You ever wonder how this story would have turned out if Achan just hadn't seen it? But we'll never know. But he did see it. And notice how that one thing just led to another. I saw it. I coveted it. I took it. And I hid it. The result of Achan's sin was death to many of those households of Israel when they faced the city of Ai. They died. Death to those of the family of Achan. Death to Achan's soul. In Romans chapter 6 and verse 23, we learn that the wages of sin is death. It always is. But what happened to Achan? What happened to Israel? What happened to Achan's family? Was the result of the choice that Achan made. Sin entered into the camp of Israel. Tremendous consequences imposed because of it. Achan chose to disobey the Lord. Now, maybe I'm talking to someone in the audience this evening. You know what's right. It's not a matter of convincing you that sin is wrong. You know that Jesus died for you. Not a matter of convincing you of that which was necessary that you might be forgiven. You understand that you can't continue doing that and go to heaven. You have to stop doing it. Or perhaps there's some things that you need to start doing because you can't go to heaven and continue the practice of sin. Would it be your desire tonight to confess your faith and to be baptized into Christ? That offer is made to you every time we meet. But you need to understand that that offer is made to you because Jesus died for you, and it's not just limited to the times that we meet. Any time that one desires to obey the gospel, that's the time to do that right now. Perhaps you've obeyed the gospel and you've not lived righteously. Achan was a child, if you please, of the people of Israel. But he committed sin. There were consequences imposed. And just saying, I've done this, didn't remove the consequence. Friend, you can escape the consequence if you'll repent of it, confess it, and ask God's forgiveness. If we can help you obey the gospel, make it known while together we stand and sing this song.
Who will follow Jesus, anyone or I? Holding up His banner in the thickest fight. Listening for His orders, just ready to obey. Who will follow Jesus, serving Him today? Who will follow Jesus, who will make reply? I am on the Lord's side, Master, here am I. Who will follow Jesus, who will make reply? I am on the Lord's side, Master, here am I. Who will follow Jesus in life's busy ways? Working for the Master, giving Him the praise. Earnest in His vineyard, honoring His laws. Faithful to His counsel, watchful for His cause. Who will follow Jesus? I am on the Lord's side, Master, here am I. Who will follow Jesus? Who will make reply? I am on the Lord's side, Master, here am I. Who will follow Jesus in His work of love? Leading others to Him, lifting prayers above. Courage, faithful servant, in His word we see. On our side forever will the Savior be. Who will follow Jesus? Who will make reply? I am on the Lord's side, Master, here am I. Who will follow Jesus? Who will make reply? I am on the Lord's side, Master, here am I.
Please be seated. Can I see the hands of those who wish to partake of the Lord's Supper this evening? Thank you. We read in 1 Corinthians chapter 11.